Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Taylor's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
As the NASCAR group comes to town, Infinity Racing, Xfinity Tour is on Saturday. Then the Cup Racing is on Sunday. And then this is a quiet weekend as far as everything else. You've got the basketball that's kind of wrapped up. All the grassroots tours have taken a hiatus. High school football around the corner, college football around the corner. Got the NFL. Training camps have opened. And then whatever else you'd like to get into. But I hope you're having a great one. I hope your week went well, like I said. Expansion of the NCAA tournament. Hot topic. We'll talk about that with Todd Leary when he joins us today. Zach Osterman also along. And Kyler Staley from thehoosier.com will be joining us. So we'll talk about that and many, many other things. We'll wrap up Big Ten football media days, as well as a look at the NBA Summer League recap with some of the former IU basketball players. Jalen Hood-Schifino playing for the Sixers, of course. And since he's gone there, he has really been given a more of an opportunity. He played out in Las Vegas just in two games, didn't score, averaged just 14 minutes and over two turnovers per game. So didn't play much for them. Out at the Salt Lake City summer games, he played in three games, scored 10 points, but so the final word on him, the former Big Ten Freshman of the Year, will be running with his third NBA team in his young professional career, having played for the Lakers. He was on the roster for the Utah Jazz. I still didn't understand that trade. That I don't get it, but it worked out for him going to Philadelphia because he finally got an opportunity there. Khalil Ware, of course, with the Miami Heat. Miller Kopp for the Detroit Pistons. Kopp had been mostly tied to the Oklahoma City Thunder G League team after his time with IU basketball came to an end, but he got a chance to run with the Detroit Pistons during the Vegas Summer League. For his spot on the team, he had an okay outing for them, but by the way things look, he will likely be once again in a G League on a G League team this upcoming season. Time will tell what team he winds up with, or if he ends up overseas even. So, but I don't see NBA in the future of Miller Kopp. Umar Ballo, also with the Miami Heat. Ballo was the second former IU basketball center that was part of the Miami Heat Summer League roster. However, he was very low on the depth chart behind Khalil Ware, of course, and other front court players. Ballo played one season at Indiana before going undrafted in this year's draft. He will likely be in the G League as well, but his best option may be to go overseas where he can earn more money because he's not an NBA player. I've said this all along. He just does not have the skill He is a one-trick pony, and that trick does not do much in the NBA anymore. So, Tamar Bates with the Denver Nuggets. Played his first two seasons of college ball with Indiana, of course, before going to Missouri to finish out his career. He went undrafted, but did sign a two-way contract with the Nuggets. So he will split time between Denver and the G League Nuggets G League team. Bates has a chance to carve out a firm role in the NBA if the opportunity comes. So congratulations to him. He's working hard to get there. Luke Goody had plenty of things, good things to say in regards to Indiana being in good hands with Darren DeVries. He was only expecting to wait about a month to hear back from the NCAA regarding his waiver for an additional season, but as the days dragged on and eventually weeks, he began to find peace in whatever the decision would end up being. The NCAA decision resulted in Goody not getting an additional year, which I was going to be surprised if he did, but he found out over the July 4th holiday weekend that that was going to be denied, and so he has moved on. But he did say that Indiana had hired some lawyers to talk to them, the NCAA, and they said about 10% of the cases get overturned by appeal. Goody said following his second round game in the 2025 TBT earlier this week, we didn't want to string it on. He just wanted to move on with his basketball career. It was just weird because I was preparing, but I didn't know what it was for, whether it was to come back to college or to possibly go on to the professional level. Just not knowing my future, I'd say, was the toughest part. I know everything's going to work out. So there's his thoughts on that. But yeah, that ended up how I thought it would end up. So Indiana's freshman Alexa Ristic and Serbia wrap up their 2025 U20 Eurobasket career. Incoming freshman Alexa Ristic and Serbia wrapped up their play in the U20 FIBA Eurobasket on Sunday afternoon with a loss to France in the third place game. Serbia won the first five games before losing its final two in the semifinals in the third place game. Ristic finished play with averages of a little over 11 points and two rebounds and six assists per game, ranked fourth in the tournament. He had 44 assists to just 17 turnovers in seven games, a 2.59 assist to turnover ratio, and that is something that you definitely want to see. Ristic, 45.9% average on field goal percentage overall, but he struggled to find his shot from three, finishing just 9 of 40 in the tournament. The incoming Indiana freshman is known for his shooting ability despite his shooting struggles in Greece over the past 2 weeks. He shot about 39% from three during his season with KK Dynamic. Shot 41.2% with Serbia in the 2024 Eurobasket. So he'll get it together. Just doesn't always go down well, man. Just doesn't always happen, and that's okay. How's everybody doing? What are your plans for the weekend? It's hot, and you're right. It is a hot and sticky one. I'm expecting to see a lot of time inside this weekend. I'm not going to lie. Have we lost some people here recently? Hulk Hogan, one of the latest, passed away yesterday at 71. Malcolm Jamal Warner from the Cosbys drowned in an accident in Costa Rica. Let's see. Chuck Mangione and Ozzy Osbourne all this week. So, some tough losses for us in across the board there. Actors, wrestlers, just people that have been around with us for a long time. But unfortunately, they have moved on. Hope everybody is having a good day. Looking forward to Todd joining us here in just a bit. And talk to him about fishing Jason's going to be doing fishing at night. Man, it's still, even at night, it's just too sticky out there. It's just, the humidity is just stifling. Mike Shenanigan says Bill Self was reportedly hospitalized yesterday with concerning symptoms. Two stents were inserted. Full recovery expected. Didn't he have a health issue before? Stress, baby. I'm telling you. It'll get to you. It will get to you. But Todd Leary is going to join us first up in the next segment. We'll get him on here and see what his plans are this weekend. I'm not sure he's going to have big plans either. This man, this humidity has just been ferocious. It's not, it hasn't been that hot here of late. I mean, it's July, so we expect 90-degree temperatures. But, man, the humidity, it's terrible. Terrible, I tell you, just terrible. We'll talk about tournament expansion today. How dumb it is. I can't wait to get Mike DeCourcy back on. He went, there's a piece in The Athletic today in which Mike and Seth Davis go back and forth about this. Mike is on the side of not expanding, and that is the most common sense thing in the world. I keep talking about how last year alone, there were teams that got in that didn't deserve to be in. And who watches the play-in games? Unless your team is playing, nobody is watching those stinking, stupid play-in games. Nobody cares. Those teams are low-level teams. And you're going to add 8 more of those? Ridiculous. Gritty's tired of sweating. Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear that. It has been nothing but a sweat box. I walked outside, changed my mind, and broke out into a sweat, man. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Todd Leary should be with us from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Jim Coyle with you here as always. We're back with more right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this hot and sticky Friday. Only good thing about that sentence is Friday as we're heading into the weekend. Looking forward, I'll be heading up to Indianapolis for the Brickyard 400 this weekend and the Xfinity race as well. I'll go up there for that. But they'll have some of the drivers available today. And then on Sunday, man, the race. We had Chase Briscoe on with us yesterday, and I am telling you, I really think that he has a solid shot of winning this because of the situation is coming in with that car that he won that at Pocono. And it would just be, what an incredible story that would be. And I know he would like that immensely, as well as his family. His sister's getting married tonight, so he's got all of that to deal with. He had a rehearsal dinner last night. You talk about running around a crazy schedule. You come in for a big time event like that, and you're in a wedding. So lots going on for him. And I'm sure that, yeah, he thanked his sister for rearranging her wedding so he could be there, because their schedule is pretty hectic. The only time they're not running is in around December, and at that time. And so nobody wants to get married at Christmas. Some people do. Makes it a good Christmas present. Philip asking, any news on the electric order Trump signed yesterday, how it impacts collectives? What's an electric order? I'm not sure what that is. Yeah, there you go. Executive order. I did not see that. Politics is not something I like to venture into on this show. But I don't understand. I will say this. I don't understand. While NIL and such definitely needs more guardrails, I don't know the best way of doing that. I do know that that trying to force a team to return to their name and blackmailing, potentially holding up a stadium, is a little ridiculous, but that's another story. The USC Notre Dame football rivalry expires in 2026, and there's no sure bet that it will go beyond that. And you know what? It shouldn't. Join a freaking conference, Notre Dame. Quit being... Notre Dame has just been allowed to stand out as this lone entity, and they've done a marvelous job of being able to withstand all of this so far. But I think that they've been allowed to in too many ways. But after all the reshuffling of schedules and conferencing and playoff formats and college football, this is probably going to be tough to continue. The contract for rivalry dates to 1926. It expires after their game in 2026. So that would be a sad loss of a 100-year deal there. But both schools have expressed a willingness to lock down more games, but differences over how many appear to be holding up negotiations. USC's move to the Big Ten gave the Trojans less flexibility on their non-conference scheduling. Big Ten teams have 9 conference games with only 3 open slots, unlike the ACC, in which Notre Dame is a quasi-member, which plays 8. They play, I think, 5 members of that league each year, so that allows them another 7 games to that they have to fill. USC's move to the speaking at the Big Ten Media Days Thursday, Trojans coach Lincoln Riley said he was, of course, hopeful that the series would continue, but not at any cost. "I want to play the game, absolutely. It's one of the reasons I came here," Riley said, "but also my allegiance and my loyalty is not to Notre Dame. And it's not to anybody else. I'm the head football coach at USC. I'm going to back USC." Some of the uncertainty revolves around the college football playoff. The Trojans have lost 6 of the last 7 against Notre Dame. If CFP leaders decide to award 4 automatic bids to the Big Ten, which is the conference's preference, a long-term deal to play the Irish might be more palatable to USC. A system with more at-large bids, however, would make it more difficult from a CFP standout to absorb a non-conference loss. And I understand that. I agree with that. Notre Dame needs to, they're a quasi-member of the weakest football conference in the country. And then they play Army, Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, the Coast Guard, and whoever else they can get in there. Yeah, it's great that those have been going on for a long, long time, but it's time. You know, it's not 1936 anymore. And so Army was good back then. Speaking of that executive order on college sports, President Donald Trump did sign a sweeping executive order yesterday that he said was aimed at rescuing college sports from an unprecedented threat, directing federal agencies to clarify whether athletes are employees, shield the NCAA and its members from antitrust lawsuits, protect Olympic and women's sports, and broadly address athlete compensation rules. The title of the White House's fact sheet: Donald J. Trump saves college sports. Time will tell. Football season kicks off in less than a month. Of course, it's unclear how or whether the executive order will be implemented. Executive orders are not laws, nor can they replace an existing law. And if any of the agencies do issue policies in response to the order, they could and probably would be challenged in court. In the order, Trump asked the Labor Secretary and the National Labor Relations Board to clarify the employment status of college athletes, probably requesting those agencies to issue guidance that says athletes are not employees of their schools or conferences. During Joe Biden's presidential term, the NLRB's general counsel issued a memo that said college athletes should be recognized as employees and attempt to unionize. The Dartmouth men's basketball team eventually voted to form a union, then withdrew its petition to the NLRB after Trump was elected, feeling Republican-controlled board would rule against its effort. The NCAA has long sought a federal bill that says athletes cannot be employees. In a section titled Legal Protection for College Athletics from Lawsuits, he asked the Attorney General and Chairman of the Federal Trade Commission to work together to shield the NCAA and its members from future antitrust lawsuits. This remains a key debate in Congress, especially the House, as an NCAA-friendly college sports bill keeps moving through that chamber. On the hot-button topic of athlete compensation, the order said that third-party pay-for-play name, image, and likeness deals should not be allowed unless the compensation is for fair market value. Well, that's kind of already in place. This is another major debate in college sports. The House case, approved by a judge in early June, allows schools to pay athletes, of course, directly, but also attempts to regulate booster spending on NIL deals. And that is to keep this under control, so we're not back under paying under the table again. And that is exactly what will happen if these are not gotten together. So we'll see how it ends up. What it really does, nobody knows right now. What will this actually do? Not sure. There's going to be more. Going to need more on that. So we'll see. We'll find out. Absolutely. You're welcome, Fulton. I hope you had a great birthday and enjoyed it, as always. Teddy Girard commits to Notre Dame. Yeah? Well, good for him. What else happened in the Big Ten media days? Big Ten versus SC rivalry boils as each league tries to claim superiority. The hottest rivalry in college football is not between teams now, but it's between the SEC and the Big Ten, it seems, which is always on a simmering note, but not usually boiling. But after days of rhetorical crossfire between them pertaining to the college football playoff, credit Penn State coach James Franklin with supplying the last dash of what is called petty on Wednesday. At Big Ten Media Days, Franklin referred to the SEC as that other conference. That's ridiculous. He did it at least three times, basically giving it the same treatment Ohio State gives Michigan by refusing to utter its actual name, which is comical. At Big Ten Media Days, Franklin referred to the SEC as that other conference. Like I said, that's just ridiculous. If the Wolverines are that team up north to the Buckeyes, the SEC is that league down south to Franklin, who lamented some areas in which the SEC out-promotes the Big Ten. That other conference, when they have their spring meetings, there's essentially a press conference every single day at the end of the meetings, said Franklin, who coached in the SEC at Vanderbilt back in 2011 to 2013 before moving on to Penn State. It keeps people talking about that conference at a time of the year that makes them relevant. We're not doing that. We need to be talking about the Big Ten and our programs and the other things we have done and making it accessible to everybody as we possibly can and connecting with the fans. Well, let me tell you that having media days out in Las Vegas ain't the way to do that, because I can just imagine how many people were not in attendance that would normally be, like myself, because the time prevented us from being able to do the show. So doesn't work like that. So we'll see. But and if you're going to praise, he's essentially praising the SEC for doing something, but you're going to slight them by calling them that other league at the same time. That's just a little petty, to be honest with you. I agree. The divergence fed into media days, the SEC in Atlanta, the Big Ten here, has transformed annual talking session into competitive campaign platforms. The SEC hammered away with 4 days of strength and schedule rhetoric. The Big Ten has responded with a three-day mantra, championing 9 league games, while its coaches praise Commissioner Tony Petitti. Well, the SEC is going to go to 9. I am more than confident of that, because they're not going to have a choice if they want to get anything as how they want the college football playoffs to go. There's no doubt about that. One thing I appreciate Tony Petitti for, the Big Ten commissioner, is he is going to stand pat on that. He's not going to come off of it, nor should he. It's everybody has to be on the same playing field. And the Big Ten is never going to go back to 8 games. I mean, I'm sure maybe some a lot of the schools would like that, because that would give you 4 non-conference games. But if that were the case, you couldn't schedule a patsy. I mean, there's no way you could schedule 4 patsies and get away with that from a competitive standpoint. You would get just slammed in the media, as you should be. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes on. But how long will it take? I cannot imagine it takes the SEC long to get to 9 games, because the change for the CFP would not take place in this upcoming season. It would be immediately after that. But they're going to have to make this decision prior to, or that won't happen. It'll be spaced further out. When, how, what will it take to get them to come to that agreement? I don't know. It obviously didn't happen yet. So we'll have to wait and see. But it's in the... It's definitely in the hands of the SEC. If they want to expand the CFP, and I don't mind an expansion of the CFP, the NCAA tournament, that's a different story. That's ridiculous, utterly ridiculous. And we'll talk with Mike DeCourcy about that when he joins us on Tuesday, as he was on the same side of that argument against Seth Davis, who took the side of pro expansion. So, expansion all around, baby. Everybody's growing. And I wonder, will this be the last expansion for the college football playoff once this expansion hits? Because I guess you get up to 16 teams. I think that would probably be it, but you never know. Does it change in the future? Do you have those play-in games like some in the Big Ten have suggested, that those determine who gets into the CFP? I mean, it's not that I mind that. I wouldn't mind seeing that. That would be probably more deserving, more fun. It would it's edging more and more towards an NFL type model now with the home games of the CFP, which that would add more home games if with the expansion to 16 games. They finally got the rankings set up as far as not awarding people like Boise State and Arizona State those buys. And they just, boy, that was, how did that not, how was this that not seen as a mistake from the beginning? I don't know. I really don't. I'm going to take a quick break. Got lots more coming up. Glad to have you along. No matter where and how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, Always the Right Call down in Evansville, or on the Voice of the Region up in the region. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. I hope you had a great week. Ready for the weekend. I'm going to try to keep a low profile, but as someone mentioned earlier, I'll be up the track, and the media center definitely has air conditioning, and that's where I'll be spending probably most of my time. I'm not going to lie. It gets hotter. You get inside those tracks, the heat just seems to stay inside of there. But we'll find out. Looking forward to a great race this weekend. Hopefully, Chase Briscoe can have some good luck, but no matter what, I hope it's a great race. Hope anyone that's heading that way enjoys it, and that's a great race overall. Russell says, if Indiana could just win the crown tournament for DeVries' first year, would provide $300,000 boost. Well, if they're in the crown tournament, that's not a good start for Darren DeVries in Indiana, I can tell you that, because that means you're not in the NCAA tournament. But there's that. Brian says, if there is more money to be made, there is more expansion to be made. Well, you ain't lying about that. That's a pretty good statement. That's the truth, because that's what it all comes down to. There's just no reason. Nobody cares about crappy teams. Why? I mean, at that point, why don't you just let everybody in? Because in essence, that's almost what you're doing. You're letting teams in that don't deserve it. There were teams in last year that didn't deserve it. And it's not like you're going to have more teams that are better all of a sudden. I don't mind teams that, there have been times where there were teams that didn't get in, and there was maybe a case. Last year was not it, and so I don't know where this is coming from. And why is there that much more money? Because who's watching? But Coach Griff jumping on.
Hey there, my man.
You've been reading up about all of this stuff that's going on as well.
Yeah, let me get myself in focus here if I can.
A little more in focus.
I don't know what's going on this morning.
But yeah, it's all of the expansion, and it's on one side. Yes, it's needed. Football needs a little expansion. Basketball, no. But it looks like eventually we're going to have expansion on both of those. And we've got the executive order that we don't know does what. We have no idea what that thing does. So
yeah, and I tell you, this technology sometimes really gets you.
Yeah, don't worry about that. That's all right. Don't worry about that. But yeah, it's what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it just kind of stated the obvious in some respects, and there we go. And they basically said that follow the College Sports Commission's guidelines that the former suit and lawyers had challenged about the NIL, and its stating has to be for a valid business purpose. And what was happening, some of the NIL stuff was being having kids show up at events and they were getting paid for that. And they didn't see that as a valid business purpose, like, you know, supporting a product or anything like that, that they would get money for. So that's the basic line there. The other thing was about the women's sports and non-rev sports, that they have some value out of the rev share in terms of support and keeping them, you know, afloat and not cutting sports. So, I mean, I don't think it's enforceable is what I've heard. With executive orders, it's not law. It's a guideline. And I'm sure it would be, it will probably more than likely be challenged anyway in court. As you know, in this country, we like to sue everybody.
I was going to say, what's not going to be challenged?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, they get to this point where they, all they want to do is sue. And it doesn't solve anything, you know? That's the problem. It doesn't solve anything because all we get is the 24/7 about you can't do this, you can't do that. And in the meantime, everybody's in the wild, wild west, just shooting guns and having fun until they're actually told what they can and cannot do. But I do think it's basically supporting the College Sports Commission and their authority to regulate what is a valid business purpose. And schools must follow that. And now they're getting somewhat protected by not having to be sued.
Yeah. You missed that little reference there. Sue Studio.
Oh yeah. Well, hell yeah. It's Friday and I'm recovering.
Recovering from what? That's supposed to happen after Friday, man.
Hey, after show recovery. You know, last
night. Oh, how did the
good
tailgate go?
I liked it. I liked how it turned out. We had a good group in the room, and some of your fellow listeners always join, so I'm very much appreciative of that. And look, I said that I believe that the 3-game gauntlet of Illinois, Iowa, and Oregon will be a defining answer on Indiana's schedule as it pertains to college football playoffs. I do believe they will come out of that at 2-1 and have a potential looming matchup in Happy Valley versus Penn State that could be a magnificent setting. And will it be a whiteout? You know, it could be a whiteout game for Penn State if Indiana goes in there with only one loss, having come out of that gauntlet 2-1. I think they beat Illinois. I do think they go to Iowa in a place that's very hard to win at. Last time Indiana went there with a team that was highly, you know, rated, they came away with a embarrassing loss. And I do think they go there and win a tight ball game. I think they've got the ability to do that. Iowa's defense is going to be really good again. We'll wait and see on the young man that they picked up from South Dakota State, Gronowski, the 2-time national champ at the FCS level. I do think Oregon has a little bit better talented team from A to Z. And that is where Indiana again is still probably, you know, a little bit behind the eight ball when it comes to those type of teams. Now that doesn't mean they can't go out and to Eugene and win it. There's no question about that. I just think that one will be a tough third game coming off of 2 games of big time must win football games, and then have to go out in Oregon and play the Ducks is not the type of recipe you want coming off of a Illinois and Iowa 2-game stretch. But I do think they come out 2-1.
There's, fortunately, they have their first off weekend in between the Iowa and Oregon game, I believe. So that's
yeah, because I do think, and I'd have to double check that, but I do think you're correct. But Oregon does have an open date prior to them playing Indiana. So they will get a 2-week period to prepare. And I know that the Big Ten has tried to stay away from a team having an advantage over another team by having a week to 2 weeks to prepare. So I do believe that will be a big benefit, like you said, having that bye week prior to going to Oregon.
Yeah, the Iowa game is September 27th, and Indiana travels to Eugene October 11th to take on Oregon. So they get a bye prior to. So that is going to set up nicely. Indiana is going to have 2 weeks to, again, like last year, perfectly placed bye. It's after five games,
yeah,
and it comes in between two tough road games. So that is a perfectly placed bye week for this team after they go out and have two back-to-back tough games, against a home game against Illinois and then at Iowa. But before they go to Eugene, they'll get those 2 weeks off and get those 2 weeks extra week to prepare for Cignetti and crew to prepare for Oregon and maybe give them something that they're not expecting. But it is definitely, I agree with everything you said. I think Indiana goes to Iowa and wins this year. I think that they beat Illinois, and who knows, they could shock a lot of people and beat Oregon. I don't know what Oregon has, because I know that they have a new quarterback. They're going to have another new quarterback as well.
Dante Moore has done
a fantastic job, and so you never discount them in any stretch. And a road game, not only a road game, but a road game on the far coast out there, that matters. We've seen that it's tough. It's tough on those teams coming back, but it's probably tougher coming back than it is going out. I don't know that, but it'll be interesting to see.
Sig has the answer to that. He goes out late, goes to bed, wakes up, and plays any team in the parking lot or the stadium, just like he did when he went to the Rose Bowl a year ago and played UCLA. Now, I do think if Indiana is 5-0 heading to Oregon, that too will be a national stage that Indiana will have the opportunity to compete on again. And you never lose sight of that, because what that gives you in value outwardly with recruits. And especially if Indiana goes out there and plays them tough, maybe
and
comes away
5-0.
Yeah.
5-0 out there. And that will be if Indiana's 5-0, because they're going to start the season ranked. And if they're 5-0, they will have beaten a ranked Illinois team. They will have beaten a tough Iowa team on the road. So Indiana's going to move up. How far? That depends on who does what in front of them as well. But Oregon, we know, will already be ranked highly just because it's Oregon, and they're part of the Big Four right now. So it's an incredible opportunity for Indiana is what it is. It's an incredible opportunity for Indiana and Cignetti to take the schedule and shove it straight up.
Everybody's
straight up the field.
And I'll say this too.
Something funny to say.
Sig will have a camp where he's going to be preparing his ball club, and he's probably one of the best to get a club prepared to go play a 60-minute football game. But he'll have a hard time, but really keeping the emphasis as the main emphasis against this Old Dominion team that comes in here. Old Dominion went to South Carolina last year, first game of the season, lost 23-19 and led in that ball game. Now, South Carolina was a team that was on the fringe of getting in the college football playoffs and had a couple big wins in the SEC. But what I'm trying to say is I think Old Dominion is picked third in their league. Sig's very well aware of what Old Dominion has. They've got the former quarterback that was there a year ago. So that preparation will be vitally important to keep the kids from peeking ahead 3 weeks to Illinois, because they're knowing that that game is going to be a big time ball game. And, you know, don't be surprised if that is on a national level broadcast, because it's the Big Ten kickoff and it's two teams that will be vying to be that team in the Big Ten this year that kind of upsets the apple cart again when it comes to the college football playoff. But, you know, the thing is their schedule is a very daunting schedule when you have to play Oregon and Penn State away. You're playing two of the perennial powers away. I mean, the only team that they have at home in a perennial power situation is Illinois for game one of the Big Ten. The next one that would even be close at home is either Michigan State or Wisconsin. And I lead towards Wisconsin than Michigan State, because, you know, they have the ability and some of the culture there to be a team that can flip it pretty quick with Luke Fickell.
Jason and Brian pointing out that one of the teams on Indiana's schedule, their non-con schedule, Old Dominion, was a relative decent team last year. Old Dominion, number 14, rushing the ball. That's impressive, to be honest with you. That's kind of surprising. But I don't think that will they're not going to get much against Indiana, I don't think. Indiana's defense is really just solid, getting solidifying. They're recruits that are coming in. They're getting great recruits on that side of the ball as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how all that goes. But, man, plenty of good stuff coming up. As football, man, it's going to be here before you know it. What is today's date? The 25th? We are just barely over 1 month.
Yeah.
I mean, August 30th. We're almost in August. Yeah. We're almost in the same month.
I know. It's crazy.
It is whack, man.
What's that, 35 days from game one? Something like that?
It is incredible.
I mean, and the kids, they report here, I do believe, next Tuesday or Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Then we'll start having open practices where we can go out, and that always is tough for me.
You better go, because there's probably not too many that Sig opens.
No, in the preseason, they usually have them.
That's great. I mean, because that's an important facet of getting to know the roster, even from everyone's perspective.
Now, basketball, we're going to have an open practice for the first time next week, for the first time in, I don't want to say in IU's history, because I can't speak to that, but Bob Knight didn't have open practices.
Oh, no.
I don't know of a coach after that had any open practices. And so, to my knowledge, this is the first, and I'm going to take credit for it. When we were down at Huber's, I asked Darren, I said, hey, I said, it'd be great if you'd allow us into a practice or two, or, you know, just every now and then. I said, nothing, you know, where you're, you know, planning for a game or something, but just whatever. And he said, I'll work on that. And I just figured it was,
yeah,
you know, whatever. Next Tuesday, we've got an open practice to attend for the first time ever.
That's awesome. And that's probably for the preparation for Puerto Rico, which is also right around the corner, which I do believe they head there, what, August the 5th?
5th through the 12th.
Yeah.
The 6th is the first game, and the 11th is the last game. They play three while they're down there. But got to take a break. We've got plenty more coming up here at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Zach Osterman will join us, and then later we'll hear from Kyler Staley to get you caught up on all things basketball going on for the Hoosiers. But Coach Griff is with us now. We've got more coming up. Back with it after these messages. If you're looking, welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, the IU beat writer for the Indy Star, joins us now. Zach, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm sorry I'm a little late. I'm actually off today, and I realized that I just completely flipped my brain off and scrambled hey, my man. Computer about 9:38 a.m. So I apologize.
You should have just took the whole day off, brother. Should have enjoyed it. But I appreciate you taking the time to be with us anyway. Yeah, you got that right. I've just wrapped up Big Ten Football Media Days, and some shots were fired over the barrels by coaches and kind of at each other a little bit. But then it seemed to be in unison against the SEC as this the expansion debate continues to I don't want to say rage on, but as it just continues. But there's really not a debate. It's just basically comes down to the Big Ten holding pat on the fact that the SEC needs to get to 9 conference games. So everybody's on the same page from that standpoint, of which I certainly agree with that. And I think that even Greg Sankey, of all people, he knows that for a fact. And as well, he is as much as said that now, but getting their coaches to come to that agreement. I don't know what they're waiting on, because that's not going to change. The Big Ten stance is not going to change, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this is one of those situations, at least for me, where everybody's got a point and therefore nobody's really right. You know, if you think about why an SEC coach might not want to go to 9 games, well, you know, if I'm Billy Napier, I have to play Florida State every year. So that's in my mind, that's my 9th game. If I'm Kirby Smart, I mean, Georgia has held the whipped hand over Georgia Tech for a long time now. But if I'm Kirby Smart, Georgia Tech is my 9th game. Kentucky plays Louisville. I don't know if we're going to get Bedlam back at any point, but if Oklahoma State's going to restart after all the sort of conference realignment, you know, Oklahoma's head coach, whether it's Brent Venables or somebody else by that point, is going to think the same thing. On the other hand, the Big Ten's points are valid, which are, listen, we went to 9 games because we have a bigger conference. We wanted more robust conference schedules. You know, we made these promises to our television partners, so it's not like we're going to get rid of them now. We're not going to go tell our TV partners that we're playing fewer games and we're delivering less inventory. But we're also not going to add, you know, we're not going to overdo our schedules just to make you happy, just to suit your criticism. And so when you see, for example, I mean, like, put it this way, and I say this as someone who grew up in a Georgia Tech family, so please don't anyone think that I have some bias against Georgia Tech. But, you know, if Georgia Tech is, let's say, maybe a 7 or 8 win team this year, you know, they've been pretty good the last couple of years under Brent Key. That's Georgia's – let's call that Georgia's 9th conference game. And I looked this up, and I'll look it up again really quickly here. Georgia's other 3 non-conference games are Marshall, Austin Peay, and then at the very end of the year they play Charlotte. And all those games are at home. What is patently different for Indiana if, let's say, for example, Wisconsin at home is Indiana's, if you want to think about it this way, Georgia Tech, or Maryland on the road is Indiana's Georgia Tech? And this is difficult because, again, I think everyone sort of has a point, and the one I agree with most fundamentally is, as long as we don't have scheduling parity, as long as we don't have, you know, like a real sort of across the board NFL style, everybody schedules according to the same formula every year. Not that you're going to get perfectly even schedules, but that everybody is using the same formula to get to their schedule every year. We are going to have these debates, and there are going to be perceived imbalances that you're going to then ask a subjective decision-making process like a selection committee to try and parse. And so people say, should we get, you know, some kind of computer formula involved? And suddenly we're back to the BCS. Should we pull all these teams into the same conferences? Well, now we're creating super conferences and something tantamount to super leagues. And I don't think that's good for the sport. I don't know. It's one of those things where at a certain point you just sort of think, like, let's just – maybe we all just need to see some games again. Because, yeah. You know, like, we're just talking and talking and talking, and there's no obvious solution. And maybe the solution is that we're all just ready for some football, and we all just need to stop talking about it and see some of it.
Yeah.
Coach?
Well, I see the point of the – dynamics in the scheduling, because it's never going to be equal when you think of scheduling 18 teams in a conference across the board. Number two, my argument about Georgia and Georgia Tech being their ninth conference game. Well, I guess you could say Ohio State playing Texas is their 10th conference game. So the argument keeps going now that you've got unequal dynamics involved in the equation. And I still think I agree for predominantly with the philosophy. Every conference plays the same number of conference games. You get the same number of non-conference games. And they're going to schedule two G5s and an FCS school like they always do. Even the SEC week 8 or 9 is playing an FCC school like Charleston Southern and playing their third team before they finish up the season with the rivalry game. So I that's going to have to be something that they're going to either have to come to an agreement, or if push comes to shove, Big Ten may have to go and, you know, move it back to 8 games. If the ACC and those guys are not going to follow suit, but I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're
going to have a choice, because I think the Big Ten kind of has the advantage here for the first time. And I don't think Tony Petitti and the Big Ten and the coaches are going to budge on that, Zach. I really don't.
No, I mean, if nothing else, their TV partners aren't going to let them. You know, you're not going to be able to go to your TV partners and say, we have fewer games for you to put on television. Fewer quality games. Like, we're going to give you I'm trying not to pick on anybody here, but, you know, just random MAC team against Big Ten team and less
State.
Yeah. And fewer actual Big Ten games. And, you know, you can say, well, you can make some non-conference, you know, scheduling requirements like what the Big Ten used to have. But the problem is, let's say Indiana plays Auburn. Well, if you do that, then who gets that game? Because the SEC's TV partner is ESPN, so half the time that game's probably going to go to ESPN. Whereas right now, Big Ten television partners know that 9 Big Ten games means that all of those games get split up between NBC, yeah, CBS, and Fox. And it's, you know, that it's also difficult because, again, if you really want to, like, drill down school by school, like, if you think about Indiana, like, for use Indiana as an example because we're talking about it now, I understand why Indiana went with the strategy it did when it did. I also think that, broadly speaking, it's just not a great thing to do to say we are going to sort of race to 3-0 with our non-conference schedules year after year after year. I think that's problematic for the sport in a lot of different ways. But, you know, Tony Petitti used the word incentive when he was talking about scheduling this week. And, you know, the flip side to that is we also can't force teams to play non-conference games if we can't guarantee them that, like, there might be season-ending penalties around them.
Yeah.
Because if you say to Indiana, you've got to go find a Power Four non-conference opponent, then, I mean, in theory, like, the Big Ten designed that rule when it had it because there were 4 playoff spots. And the ultimate currency, obviously, was getting in the playoff. That was very difficult. And really, the ultimate goal was to get 2 teams in the playoff, something the SEC managed 3 or 4 times, the Big Ten did once. And the Big Ten wanted just, like, schedules that were as competitive as possible. The idea being they wanted their best teams to get in front of the committee and say, nobody's better than us because nobody's been tested more than us. Nobody's proven it more than us. And when they said everybody's got to play a Power 5 non-conference game, because it was obviously 5 then, not 4, number one, they weren't going to say, well, we're only going to create this rule for the 5 schools that we think can go to the playoff. That's not how you you know, that that's just not how you operate. And number two, there was kind of the argument that you think about Indiana, for example, in 2014, injuries and stuff, that team only goes 4-8 because of, you know, just the way the season unfolds. But that team also goes to Missouri and wins. And Missouri wins the SEC East that year. And in the aggregate, that is kind of an all boats rise because a Big Ten team went on the road against an SEC team, challenged itself, and won. And now the whole conference gets lifted up just a percentage point. You know, that doesn't happen as much now because these conferences are so consolidated. And then if you talk about, you know, the structure of the forthcoming 16-team playoff, which I think we all expect we're going to get to in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years. Well, if the Big Ten gets its way and has automatic qualifiers, why would it matter what teams are doing in the non-conference? Because literally at that point, all that matters is your conference record. You know, in theory, you could go 0-3 in the non-conference, 6-3 in the Big Ten, win the right set of tiebreakers, win the play-in game that they're talking about, and go into the playoff 7-6. I mean, that's obviously an unlikely scenario in this hypothetical future. But the point is, and I think we've all learned this in the last couple of weeks, once you pull on the scheduling thread, you find that there are all kinds of contradicting thoughts and opinions and you know, sort of options. And really, I don't see – I mean, I am one that believes we need scheduling parity as well. I don't see a comfortable path to getting there. Until then, I think we all just have to accept that teams – kind of just need to be allowed to do whatever they think is best for them. And if there comes a year where Indiana gets punished for playing two G5s and an FCS, like Shannon said, then so be it. Then that's the choice Indiana made, you know? And then if there comes a year where Ohio State loses to Texas week one and then goes, I don't know, you know, 7-2 in the Big Ten, but gets passed by a couple of 10-win SEC programs, then that's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. None of it's ever perfect.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's the thing that I think there's two things in the mind outside of the college football playoffs with this scheduling mm-hmm. debate as well. The bowl system and having that 6-win, qualifier for the bowl group. So if you don't get in the college football playoffs, you during a situation where you're at least trying to qualify for whatever bowl may be there for your team to get those extra practices when it comes to bowl season.
Yeah.
So the mentality that I think Sig and some of these coaches are thinking, yes, our goal is to win the Big Ten. Our goal is to get in the college football playoffs, but we also have to have a goal that is on the back burner that we got to be bowl eligible so that we do not get shut out of the opportunities that bowl season presents a team like Indiana or anybody other team of getting those extra practices heading into the bowl season.
A coach will tell you, college coaches will tell you, that's basically a second spring practice.
No question.
It's bowl season. And especially in the Midwest, and I know a few more schools have opened this up now, but especially in the Midwest where a lot of states still don't do like a traditional spring. I remember Kevin Wilson talking about this, that he said in states that don't have a traditional spring practice, you don't think about it on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, most states allow 10 to 12 spring practices. Well, if you grow up in, and I think at the time Ohio didn't have it, I don't know if they do now, that's 40 to 45 practices mm-hmm. in your life you never got as a football player that you are trying to backfill in college. And obviously, listen, there are still plenty of talented players that have come out of these states that we're talking about that have gone on to great careers. But the point is, if you're a football coach and you're worrying about the aggregate, you're worrying about all 85 and trying to develop the whole group, you know, the idea of that many extra practices, especially ones that are going to be geared more toward younger players, players that probably didn't get as much time on the field during the season, but now you can rest your starters and you can really develop redshirt guys, freshmen, and so forth. Like, yeah, those practices are invaluable.
One of the things that I've been kind of not amazing, but it's just really stood out to me this year is that how Indiana is still being lambasted about their schedule for last year when they have won this season that is as solid as you want. They you open with a team, Illinois, that's going to be ranked. You go to an Iowa team that's going to be tough. And, of course, at Oregon, at Penn State. So there will be no questions whatsoever about their schedule. But it just seems that people are still just beating on this. But I'm starting to wonder if it's not just to get a rise out of Cignetti, because they know it'll get a rise out of Cignetti.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'll say what I said when this stuff really came up last year. I said, if they're talking about you, you're doing something right. You know, if no one cared what Indiana's schedule was when Indiana was 3-9 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like no one.
Nor did they care what it was when they were in the Big Ten East.
Other than some Louisville fans, you know, throwing things around on Twitter. Nobody batted an eye when Indiana dumped the Louisville series, you know, in Tom Allen's last year, trying to get to a place where it could, you know, more easily get to 6 or 7 wins. Like there were a lot of people who said, yeah, for a program like Indiana, that makes a lot of sense. If they're talking about you, you're doing something right. And so that's the most fundamental thing. I think fundamental reaction I have to a lot of this stuff. I also, And this is not an original sentiment. I have to credit Adam Rittenberg for it. Adam's a good friend, obviously covers the Big Ten for ESPN. And he kind of made the point too, and this was around the Indiana scheduling debate when it really sort of flared up, I think, around SEC media days, where he said, you know, we're also talking about Indiana's 2024 schedule like it's the rule, when really – a season like that is probably an outlier.
Yeah.
The idea that you're going to have such a defined top of the conference and then such a large gap to basically from the top four to the middle is, you know, the Big Ten is going to, as Shannon said, it's going to become more competitively imbalanced because teams aren't playing the same schedules. And, you know, I mean, like last year's a great example. Oregon had to play, or Ohio State had to play all three of the top four. None of the other top four had to play anybody in the top four except Ohio State. Oregon, Penn State, and Indiana did not play each other at all. They all played Ohio State. We are going to get stuff like that fairly often, but we're not going to get this world where we have, you know, four teams that are all like clearly among the 10 best in the country, playoff caliber. At least two of them are national title contenders, if not three, if not all four. And then like the next best team in the conference is 7-5. Or, you know, I think a couple landed in kind of the 8-win range, but like, you know, the idea that the gap is so large between the upper class and the middle class in the conference, and that a team in Indiana would wind up, just by the virtue of the way the season unfolded, playing so many of those teams that were so far beneath it. It's just very unlikely. And Adam's point was, this year is that looks more like the outlier, and Indiana's schedule this year looks more like, you know, kind of what should be customary. And if Indiana goes 10-2 or 11-1 against this schedule, then Indiana will earn its way back into the playoff. And if it doesn't, then it won't. It'll, you know, it'll go 8-4, 9-3. It'll go to a bowl game. And there will be a lot of people say, see, Indiana was a fraud. And they, of course, that won't be true. It's just that every once in a while you get an uncommonly favorable schedule. And every once in a while, Indiana fans know well, you get an uncommonly difficult schedule. Indiana, for the first time in a while, got a schedule it could manage last year. And it took complete advantage of that. And it should not, you know, for any reason apologize for that.
And it was actually by happenstance, because who knew that the two teams that just played in the national championship game were not going to be what they normally were. So, Jack, appreciate you as always, buddy. Go try to enjoy your day off. It's like you said, it's too hot to enjoy it, but I tried to do so as much as possible. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Good talking to you. We'll see you soon.
Hey, make sure you're giving Zach a follow and being a subscriber. Indy Star, keep local papers alive. More coming up. Kyler Staley from thehoosier.com will join us. A little basketball talk for you to head out on the weekend when we return after these messages. Welcome back to Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios, Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Coach Griff is with us, and now we're joined by Kyler Staley from the Hoosier.com. How are you, sir?
Going on, guys. How's it going?
Now, I'm gonna call you. I started to call you Little Hulk, the Little Hulkster. Hulk Hogan, of course, passed away yesterday, unfortunately. Kyler's like the Little Hulkster, man. He's got these guns on him. If you ever see him in person, don't mess with Kyler, baby. But how's the Little Hulkster doing?
I'm doing good. I'm actually a huge wrestling fan, so yeah, it was kind of hard for me yesterday. But rest in peace to Hulk Hogan, one of the greatest of all time.
Man, that kind of surprised me. It shouldn't. I didn't realize he was 71. Yeah. I mean, he died of a massive heart attack, which that makes perfect sense. As big as he was, I know, he, at some point he took steroids. Man, to make it that long. But that's the one that still got me was Randy Macho Man Savage, man. When he went, that was hard for me, man. He was the greatest character of all time. I think he developed the greatest persona of any wrestling character that there ever was. He just, oh yeah, he was so funny. He was quick-witted. He was literally funny, man. He was entertaining. He really was entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sad to see, like, that era of wrestlers, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, the Mega Powers, as they called themselves, you know, when they were a team. You know, obviously Macho Man died of a heart attack, I think it was a heart attack, and then had a car wreck at the same time. So, but no, you know, Hulk Hogan, 71, still seems pretty young in some ways, but obviously, you know, tolls on your body, you know, the steroids back in the 80s, you know, steroids was pretty big, you know, going through professional wrestling. And from what I have read and everything, it looks like Hogan had a neck surgery back in May, had complications with that. And then it just kind of piled up. I think this past week, there was reports that he couldn't actually even talk. So it's a sad day. It feels like Hulk Hogan's like one of those guys where, like, you know, they called him the immortal Hulk Hogan, like he was never going to die. He's going to be here forever. Right. So it's definitely a strange feeling knowing that there's no Hulk Hogan on this earth anymore.
Yep. They are definitely on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. There's no doubt about that. Of course, man, basketball is wrapped up, but it's about to unwrap again when Indiana heads off to Puerto Rico. But I call it AAU, grassroots, whatever. There's so many tours. What should we call this now?
Basketball.
See, we used to be able to say AAU or whatever, but the summer tours have come to a close. The live evaluation periods have wrapped up. Relationships were continued or established, and Indiana has been doing seems to be a pretty superb job getting out and making these relationships, was what, you know, something that we didn't see in the 4 years prior to that. But they are all this as a staff doing a good job on working with these guys and getting visits scheduled and whatnot. And it looks like that Indiana is heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, relationship building is key, right? And you obviously want to do that when you're a brand new head coach like Darren DeVries. Not brand new, but, you know, obviously in Indiana, the brand new Indiana head coach, and obviously his staff. What I love about his staff, and I've talked about it before, is like his staff just has all these bases covered throughout the country, even international and everything as well. So, but yeah, relationship building is, I mean, great for them. They've got a lot of guys that they've extended offers to. And I think you'll see kind of, you know, the tiers. We've got our July hot board on the Hoosier.com, and you'll see kind of the guys that they're going after the hardest, and the guys that, you know, are kind of there as a kind of a filler there. But, you know, what I like about DeVries is that when he extends an offer or the coaching staff extends an offer, it means something. It actually means it's not just because he's a McDonald's the player's a McDonald's All-American, a five-star or whatever, just because it has a big name. It means something. That means DeVries, you know, this is a guy that fit in his system. He wants to recruit him. He wants to build that relationship, get him on campus. And I think he's done a good job of scheduling on-campus visits. There's a lot for the 2026 class are getting ready to come up. He's building relationships with the 2027 class, and then he's extended, I think, a couple of offers right now to the 2028 class. So he's starting early, man, and I think it's only going to continue to grow and get better, because I do think that he is going to always have at least a two or three, at least, freshman class every single season, and he's going to help develop those guys. And then, you know, by their sophomore, junior years, they're a part of the DeVries system, and they know what they're doing on the floor.
Well, that's one thing that I have seen for certain, is he is not going to be relying on the portal only. He, just as you just said, he is going to recruit kids and have them on a continuous wave of coming in and trying to develop his own talent. Now, that is a difficult thing to do in this day and age, because you don't know that you're going to be able to keep them from year to year. But if you develop, if you make the relationships and get the right guys in, then I think that that can happen. Matt Painter has been able to hold on to that philosophy so far at Purdue, and looking over some of these kids right now, Anthony Thompson, five-star small forward. Indiana's on his list of seven, but so is Purdue, along with the other big-time schools like North Carolina, Texas, Kentucky, Michigan. Texas is on that list as well, but that would be a huge get. But any of these guys are going to be a huge get. I think that Darren has done a good job in just really reestablishing Indiana as a spot for these guys. Indiana used to give out these offers under Mike Whitson, but it just seemed like it was that they were just being handed out like a candy bar at the during Halloween. So this is a different feel to it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you mentioned the transfer portal. Obviously, you know, this season aside, I do agree with you. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to rely on developing kids, putting them in his system for a few years and developing them. And then by the time they're sophomore juniors, they're good to go. But, you know, I think with these successful programs are the guys that you've developed in your system, you're able to keep in your system for a few years. And then you obviously want to fill the gaps with the transfer portal. You don't want to over rely on it. This season, you had to do that. You know, you had to get a completely new roster. There's nobody from last year's team that's on this roster anymore. So you have to fill in every single gap. But I think moving forward, you know, there's a lot of upperclassmen, obviously, with this Indiana team this season. So there's going to be multiple gaps to fill. Yeah, I think he'll have a good freshman class coming in. I'm pretty confident that he's going to land at least two more guys in the 2026 class. And then you'll have a few that are returning as well. So I think that's what you'll see moving forward. You'll fill in the gaps. DeVries will fill in the gaps in the transfer portal where you need to fill in the gaps. You need guys that are ready to come in right away and compete with that. But at the same time, he wants to build a program, and he wants to sustain that program and kind of build it from the ground up, as you could say.
Coach?
Hey, Kyler. How you doing, my man? Good seeing you. You got this Puerto Rico trip coming up for Indiana. And while some may think that it's just a chance for them to get an experience at a destination, maybe their guys may never have gone, what do you think is the priorities heading down there for the coaching staff? You know, what do you think they want to see from them in this 3-game exhibition set? They're going to play pretty good competition with Serbia, the national team that they're going to play the first game there, probably not going to be that a stiff of competition. What are your thoughts on that, what they're going to look for as a basketball team going down there for the first time?
I mean, I think kind of a basic answer is everything, right? I think it's going to be the first time you get to see this team. Obviously, you've got practice settings and things like that. They're competing against practice players as well. But, like, it's going to be the first setting you actually get to see them against real competition. So I think he's going to want to see, you know, how the floor chemistry is, what players play well together, what lineups play well together. I fully expect there won't be a same starting five every three games. I think he'll kind of mix it up and see what happens with these guys. Obviously, you've got guys like Lamar Wilkerson, Tucker DeVries, Tank Conaway that like are for sure starters with this group and everything. But I think it's just to see like what he's got, right? And I think that the whole entire staff just want to see what these guys have in pressure situations, in game settings, what can they do on the floor. And I wish that every single college could do this type of trip every single year. I know that there's a thing, it's every 4 years that they can do this or whatnot, but I think this is a really, really good advantage for Indiana, a brand new team, brand new coaching staff, you know, just to see what you got on the floor and what they can do. And then when you come back to the United States, you can kind of break everything down. You can tweak things in practice and then get ready for the season, ready to go. So I think it's an important trip. I think it's going to be a really good trip for Indiana. They're going to build team chemistry both on and off the floor. And they're going to see what they got, you know, so far.
Yeah, I am looking forward to seeing these games and seeing this team because we really have no idea. Now, I was talking earlier and about the upcoming open practice, and you didn't hear this, so I'll repeat it. I'm taking full credit for this, Kyler, of us getting to do this because I asked for this when we were at Huber's. But this is unique. This has not happened to my knowledge. From Bob Knight forward. And so it's going to be it's not like they're going to show us what the game plan against some particular teams are, all that stuff, but it's just to be able to see these guys, see how they move, see how they flow, see who's on the court, where, who's doing what, who's handling the ball, who is the point guard, who is, you know, moving ahead, who looks better. It's just going to be a great idea. How's Trent Sisley looking with these guys? There's just so much that I look forward to hopefully seeing in that little period that we get there. But then, of course, more of that will happen when they head down to Puerto Rico and just very shortly. But they will get that tough game against the one Serbian team. I mean, I think that's going to be a great matchup. And maybe that's why the games are not being streamed. I don't know.
Yeah, it is really a shame that these games are not being streamed, but it makes sense in a lot of ways too. But you know, back to the open practice, like, yeah, when's the last time this has ever happened? You know, I've been covering. You've obviously been covering Indiana for a lot longer than what I have, but I think I started covering Indiana for you in 2021, somewhere around there. So never have seen anything like this, but
I don't know that it's ever happened because prior to Bob Knight, there was probably no reason. It may have been considered an open practice because there wasn't hardly any media in 1970. Yeah. I mean, you had the one newspaper and that was it. So yeah, no, not in the advent of the media era. I don't think it has ever happened in Indiana.
The only thing that I can think of that was comparable to this, and it's not going to be as, you know, in-depth, was, you know, when I was younger, I remember going to they would promote an open practice. Tom Crean coaching, when he was coaching back in the day, they would promote. So it'd be like a fan thing that they would go to, but it'd be very, very late what they were doing. So
I think you're right. Tom may have done that well with the media as well sometimes. I can't remember. I wasn't around at that point. I was elsewhere, but I'm glad you brought that up. I'll have to look into that. But regardless, we're going to get a treat because neither of us have been able to go through that. But more importantly, we're going to get to see this team and get an idea. Now, we won't be tweeting about it during the practice. We won't be shooting any highlights or taking any pictures or anything like that. It's not what they want us to do. And we'll all respect that and appreciate that. But just to get that visual that we can come back and talk about, and you'll be writing about as well. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now all we hear is rumblings, right? It's kind of like he said, she said type of things on how these guys are doing. But for us to get in there, like you said, we're not going to be tweeting, you know, videos, nothing like that. It's going to be crazy. But for us to just go in there as media, the core media guys, all the media outlets that cover this Indiana team, you know, 24/7, for us to go in there and get to see these guys, see what they do, you know, from, you know, being right across, you know, the gym from them and getting to see like full hand what these guys can do, especially for the people that are going into the Puerto Rico trip, you have kind of a sense on what these guys can do on the floor. But I think it's great. You know, obviously it's not going to be anything too crazy. I don't think there's obviously DeVries is not going to give away a lot of stuff or anything, but same time, you just get to see these guys in full contact, you just see what they do on the floor. I think it's really, really important, you know, and then obviously it comes in, you know, when the season does start, us media, we have a sense of what these guys can do on the floor. Obviously, we know what they can do from the readings and highlights and what we've seen from last year's where they were on previous teams. But for us to see, okay, DeVries is going to use this guy a certain way, possibly vice versa, like, I think this is going to be really, really, really important, and I'm really, really looking forward to having this opportunity.
Absolutely, me as well. What is up next for you, my friend?
Yeah, so, I mean, AAU, as far as me going out right now, that's done. So things are going to be a little bit quieter in the August. You know, it's full football right now, and I got to give a shout-out to Zach and Colin for them going out to Vegas, you know, covering that. They did a phenomenal job, so I totally – want to promote, you know, go to thehoosier.com, sign up and read their stuff. They did a great, great job. But, you know, right now I'm going to be helping out as much as football as I can, you know, keeping up with basketball. I am going to write kind of a storyline before the Puerto Rico trip. So just things to look out for and stuff. Probably have that up next week. But as far as that, keeping up with the recruiting and certain things. But we got a lot over at thehoosier.com. Everyone that's listening to this right now, you guys got to go over there and check everything out because we've got a lot of really, really good stuff.
I think on there's 14 pieces of content that came out on the first day of Big Ten Media Days, I think.
Yeah.
Right. That's mostly football. That's
more than the Indy Star. I'm not putting up against Indy Star, but that's more sports content total than probably in the Indy Star, people. Trust me, if you want content about Indiana, thehoosier.com is nothing but that. And all of them are, including Kyler, doing an amazing job. Alec Lasley as well. You guys are just killing it. Congratulations. Continue the great work.
I appreciate it. We got a really good group. This is probably the best team that I think I've ever been a part of when it comes to doing this. So go to thehoosier.com, check all of our stuff out, sign up for our premium stuff, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. I want to throw that out as well. So we really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, there's so much on there. The hot board for July. You've got the 2028 prospect about A.J. Williams, the latest on the Peach Bud Jam after the Peach Jam – Peach Jam buzz, rather, after it finalized. Top 25 prospect Ethan Taylor talking about his recruiting trips, Jordan Smith as well. So just all kinds of information and insider information that comes from deep, deep inside, people. Kyler, go out and have yourself a great weekend, brother.
You as well, guys.
See you, Kyler.
We've got more coming up. Coach will be with me, and we'll finish things out on the other side, when we return to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Andy Moore Honda is Bloomington's number one Honda dealer for a reason. Buy a new Honda and get a three-month break from car payments. That's right, no payments for 90 days. That includes the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue. And you get it for just 0.9% financing. Or the 2024 Honda Ridgeline Black Edition or the Honda Accord LX, both for just 1.9% financing. Get more to your door from AndyMoreHonda.com, Bloomington's number one Honda dealer and your best place for new and used vehicles. If you're looking for a new home in the Indianapolis area, you need Cheryl Sizemore from Brick and Ivy Realty. Cheryl Sizemore has over two decades of experience, and that could be the difference in getting the home you want in today's tough housing market. Reach out to Cheryl at CherylSizemoreSells@gmail.com or 317-701-0838. That's 317-701-0838. Let Cheryl Sizemore sell or find your new home today. Located on 325 acres in beautiful Brown County, Indiana, Hard Truth Distilling Company is the biggest and the best craft distillery around. While Hard Truth is already known for producing internationally awarded whiskeys and spirits like Hard Truth Sour Mash Bourbons, Sweet Mash, and Hard Road Rye, as well as their cinnamon vodka and the always popular Toasted Coconut Rum, Hard Truth Distillery offers so much more. With a full service restaurant, ATV and distillery tours, as well as live music, you can spend an entire day at Hard Truth Distillery while making your entire family or group happy. And that's the hard truth. Hard Truth products are available across Indiana as well as many other states. So no matter where you shop, if they don't carry your favorite Hard Truth product, tell them you want the truth, the hard truth. Hard Truth Distilling Company encourages you to enjoy all of their products responsibly and to never drink and drive. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Jim Coyle with you as always. Looking forward to doing not a lot this weekend, but the Brickyard 400 happening up the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So I'll be up there on Sunday, hoping that Chase Briscoe can pull out a win. That would be fantastic. And congratulations to him and his to his sister getting married tonight. So lots going on there, man. He's got all kinds of stuff to unpack. That's probably, but when I was talking to Chase, he recently got to throw out the first pitch at a Chicago Cubs game.
Yeah.
And they were up there. And I'm like, wow. And he said that it was by far the most nervous that he's ever been in his life. This is a guy that drives 200 miles an hour for a living. And that was the most nervous he's ever been. But I get it. Because you're in the car, you got a helmet on.
You're protected in the car.
And nobody can see you. And you feel like you're invisible almost.
Yep.
Well, you're out on that mound. Oh no, you got 60 whatever thousand people, 120,000 eyes on you, and you've got to do one thing. You've got to take that ball and you have got to throw. Doesn't have to necessarily be a strike, but you got to get it in the region. And he apparently threw a strike, but I could tell by the picture. I'm like, because he stood on the mound.
Yeah, and that was the one thing.
They tell most don't stand on the mound because you're not used to it. It's, you know, much higher. And oh no, he was up on the rubber, baby. And I could, his throwing motion, I was like, you had a little league baseball career. I can tell because he looked good. He was an athlete. But and that's another debate that I used to have with Todd Leary, who couldn't be with us today, unfortunately. But he always says that those guys are not athletes. And I'm like, well, I'm going to disagree with you there because they are all, you know, big time into cardio, into taking care of themselves. During a race, their heart rates are just jacked for 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And the heat inside of those cars, it's like this weekend, it'll be stifling.
I can only imagine.
But if you're driving around when it's 95 degrees and the humidity that we have, roll the window down and see how that hot air running through there feels. All that is hot air moving. It's not cool air.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing in those cars, man. And so then the heat that is generated from those, it's even more so, plus of what they're wearing. It's you've got a helmet on, no heat's escaping. You've got those suits on and what you're wearing underneath of the suits.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
very comparable to what football players go through when you're playing in a game that's 90 degrees out with the on the field temperatures 130 because of not that the crowd and everything above you. It's hot. Even in my coaching days, I mean, when we went to Florida to play Florida, it was hot and those kids were, you know, and the coaches were just ripping. I mean, we're changing shirts at halftime and everything because it's just unbearable at times.
Did it feel stifling. Like you were playing in a swamp?
Oh, it was a swamp. Of course, it's named perfectly as the swamp. That game was against
That's one of the great nicknames in college football.
Yeah, it was a beautiful experience as we rode into Gainesville into Thursday or Friday practice. The fans aligned the streets for us to welcome us with a number one salute. That was beautiful. We thought them for that, but yeah, it was this very hot day against the old ball coach. It was an evening game, and Rex Grossman was the backup quarterback then. Spurrier. You know, these guys in these race cars, you talked about the preparation that they go through to get through a season. You also got to think of the mental approach because everything in sports is mental in some capacity. I mean, some think even in physical sports, it's 90%, 95% mental and you know, 5% what you bring to the table athletically. But these guys, I mean, finding lines, making the moves, you know, holding in the car that's not perfectly set up. I always wanted to know in these suits, because they got these cool suits now that they've got the circulation of the cool water, and I don't know how much that helps or doesn't help. But man, I just think of myself, if I had to go drive a 400 mile race, I'd have to take a pit stop. I'd have to, at some point, we'd have to, hey guys, we got to take an exit here. I need a break.
I think they sweat it all out.
I don't know how they do it in that car for 400 laps, 500 laps. I mean, the Coca-Cola, you know,
600. Or, yeah. 600 mile race there.
One is just, I can just imagine how grueling that is. So,
well, today up at the IMSC, it opens up with Xfinity Series practice, and then the Brickyard 400 Cup Series practice is today, this afternoon as well. And then tomorrow they've got the Xfinity race. You've got Cup practice and qualifying tomorrow, yeah. I believe, Saturday, and then Sunday, the Brickyard 400. So, hopefully there's lots of media availability as well today as well. So, but lots going on up at Indianapolis, and I'm sure, I don't know if Roswell, looks like he made it up to the race last night on the sprint cars. And so, hope that went well and enjoyed that. But, yeah, it's a fun weekend. It's, you know, this race has moved around, and it's just, it hasn't, hopefully this is, you know, the date for it that'll stick. It's a hot time, but I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, there's so many races on the schedule, so many places, and you got to make it work. But I'm glad that they're back on the oval, at least. But I hope this is a good race. That's the most important part, man. I just hope it's a good, fun race. And like I said, I'd love to see Chase Briscoe win. That would just be awesome for him and his family. And what a way to cap off an incredible weekend for his family.
Yeah.
You know, he's a third generation racer. It started with his grandpa, who wasn't much of a racer, but was an owner. Car guy. He team owner, and Kinzer's drove for him and just been very successful. His dad, Kevin, drove several hundreds of wins in sprint cars. And so a racing family, man. And then, of course, Chase has now gone on and taken it to new heights. But we'll see this weekend as Justin Allgaier and Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, all those guys will be there, man. And Denny Hamlin just coming off of a win. Chase has finished second in back-to-back races at two different tracks. So hopefully
he's having a great year.
A little bit better luck this weekend. He won at Pocono not too long ago, but he could get a win here. That would be fantastic. What else is on the docket for you this weekend, man?
Hey, we're just going to relax and take in the lake and all the things that go with that. And enjoy some R&R as we try to every weekend. I'm still geared in that football mode of getting to your point of you got to get your rest, because once practice started and everything else, it was 100 miles an hour. And I always told my wife when we reported to camp, I kiss her on the lips and say, I'll see you at Thanksgiving.
Just for a break, just for a minute.
Yeah. And those days she was raising two munchkins, you know, and I was out having fun coaching ball, and she was at home chasing kids around and, doing her thing. So, I married a winner. She keeps me straight and forward and honest, but, you got to get your rest before season starts, because
absolutely. Because this year, even more so, if the Big Ten gets its way, also they will have those play-in games now. Right. So that's interconference play-in games, right? Mm-hmm. That we're talking about
there. Yeah, that's what I think they're trying to say is, you know, that 3-6, 4-5 or something to that extent.
And that's how it should be. I agree. And that's how the SEC should do it. But the SEC probably doesn't want to do that because they want to be,
yeah, they want the resume.
They want to try to get as many teams in CFP as possible. Where the Big Ten is content with, hey, we'll take the four guaranteed spots every year, and we'll determine who those four are by having these play-in games. The SEC, however, is like, oh no, we might get five, we might get six in. So therefore they don't want to play-in games because they don't want those teams eliminated from the possibility of going in.
Well, that's interesting because if you think about it, if I'm the, you know, fifth or sixth team on the outside of that four team potential, well, why I would want a play-in game because, you know, again, it goes sometimes at the end of the year, a team can get really hot and start playing really well. And I think a little bit like kind of South Carolina last year kind of really came on in that midpoint all the way through. And they were left on the outside looking in, not to say that they deserve it or not, but they would be one team. I would say it was like, hey, give me a chance at three or give me a chance at four, because right now we may be better than them.
That's right, baby. And it's been better. It's been better with you all week. Had fun. Go out and have a great weekend. I hope everybody else goes out, has a great weekend, relax, do whatever you need to do. And, we're back on Monday. We'll be at the Brickyard this weekend to bring some of that coverage to you on Monday as well. But have a great time. Coach, you have a great weekend and enjoy that R&R.
I will do my best.
I hope everybody else does the same. I'm back on Monday to do it again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.